One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Will and I'm here with my two friends, Ant and Anna.
Hi.
Welcome to 2023!
You're supposed to say hello according to the script.
Oh yeah, sorry. Hello!
Thank you. This week we're talking about the year 916.
A real banger.
Yeah, so much.
I'm always a bit confused as to how you're actually supposed to say years with only three numbers in them. Is it 916 acceptable?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. As opposed to 916?
Yeah, I guess.
916?
Yeah.
I guess there's no other way to say it.
1,000 minus 84.
Okay, fine, withdrawn. And as is our custom, I would like each of us to give a three-word preview of what we are discussing today. Please, Ant.
Oh, God, I actually haven't studied for this test, but I'm going to say Flan the Man.
Oh, great. I hope you talk about somebody named, like, Godfrey.
Oh, no, he's called Flan.
Ah, okay. Fair enough.
And Anna?
My three words are harlots in charge.
Wow. So much to explore there.
Yep.
And mine are Norse raiding antics.
Oh, good.
He's back on his...
war.
Yep.
That old chestnut.
You mean history?
Yeah, I right. like to think I'm of history as a history. Chestnut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good, great.
This week, I'm going to talk about Earl Ottier, also known as Count Otter, which is coincidentally also the name of a pet I had who was lost at sea when I was 7.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh no, Earl Otter!
I don't know why you're making a joke out of what was actually quite a moving
experience. No, that was a historical reenactment.
Oh, I see.
That was a dramatic retelling.
I'll never let you go, Otter?
Yeah.
Is that what happened in the
sea? Why wouldn't you just let him crawl up on the door with you while you're floating in the frigid waters?
It was more that he was swimming away as fast as he could in another direction.
Freedom!
Earl Ottier was a Jarl, which is just a Norse word for an Earl, and he occupied a prominent position in the Norse of Britain and Ireland in the early 10th century. And he is believed to be the founder of a settlement which later became present-day Irish city of Waterford.
Ooh. Is that where the crystal comes from?
It is exactly where the crystal comes from.
Wow.
And a bla.
Excuse me?
It is a UNESCO heritage term for a flowery bap. Much like champagne can only be made in Champagne region, The bla can only be made in Waterford.
The bla?
B-L-A, maybe a H at the end.
Boy howdy, do they need some marketing advice
It's just
there.
A flowery bap.
Okay, that's love it. A flowery bap.
Was that a placeholder name for...
No.
It found its way into the final draft.
Yeah. You can have a savoury bla, a jammy bla, a sweet bla...
Oh, sweet blah.
The priests give you their last blah before you die.
Well, we are talking about pre-Blar Island. And in this period, from about 916 for the following couple of years, Ottir was a close associate of the powerful over-king, Ragnall Ua-Imer.
Oh my God.
And do you like that one?
I did like that one. We've had over-kings and jarls before, but never have they existed in the same episode. So this is very exciting.
And this is the over-king of the Norse, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And the Norse at this point were raiding all around, like the north of Scotland, northeast of England a little bit, and the east of Ireland, so down the Irish Sea. So they were taking and
pillaging
and being in charge generally of lands around there. So this is a Jarl and Overking working together. Mm. And so a lot of what we know about Ottir was recorded as a result of his closeness to Ragnall, although we don't think they're related or anything. We think they're just good friends.
Just buds.
Just close friends.
Just two men who share a tent and their secrets.
And the chronicles add no further detail.
No.
Unfortunately. And in Ireland, Ottir is associated with raiding and generally being a bloody hassle in the province of Munster.
Yep.
And sources describe him raiding along the coast there with Ragnall and associates.
Ragnall and associates handled my last divorce, and they did not do a good job.
Oh, yeah, they really let you down, didn't they?
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah.
You lost all your raided terrains.
I lost everything I'd ever pillaged.
That's so sad. I'm sorry. Because, of course, your ex-husband now owns half of Waterford, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah,
he
does. Jarl, yeah, yeah. Jarl,
the Blah fortunes are his.
Yeah, oh my God. The Blah king of Waterford. That's could have been mine.
And a particular favourite target for them was the Viking settlement of Cork.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yes. So that was something they enjoyed focusing on. And they used to base themselves in what is present-day Waterford Harbour for all their naughty raiding antics. And in the year in question, the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle describes their raid up the River Severn in Britain. Here, in this year, a great raiding ship army, and this, yes, that's right, ship army is the word being used there by the chronicle.
Yeah. A ship army.
A wet war, yeah.
The great raiding ship army came over here from the south, from Brittany. Dubious as to whether it came from Britain. Yeah. It probably didn't come from Brittany. And with them were two Jarls, Ottir and Harald. I'm not really sure who Harald is.
Yeah,
first time
important.
He's appeared.
Yeah, first and last time.
And went around west until they got into the mouth of the Severn and raided in Wales everywhere by the sea where it suited them and took Camelac, Bishop of Arkenfield, and led him with them to their ships. And then King Edward ransomed him back for £40.
Oh, 40 quid for a bishop.
Sum.
Yeah. So they're getting
up to all sorts of naughtiness.
Yeah, very naughty. It's great.
A princely sum or a bishoply sum. Another chronicle scribe who is writing in what's known as the Worcester manuscript states that Ottir and Harald captured the bishop in 915 and that then the Jarls were killed that same year. And actually it's a bit, it's the subject of some contestation as to exactly when he ended up dying. But their deaths occurred either, apparently, in the Battle of Kildane Field.
Appropriately named. Yeah. Well, no, sorry, they weren't Danes. They were.
No, the Battle of Kildane Field, it turns out, was named after the fact that it was the place of the death of a bunch of Danish raiders.
There you
Kildane,
go. Okay.
Which is in Western Under Penyard in Herefordshire. And Ottir, alternatively, according to another history, died in battle against Constantine II of Scotland in 918. And he either joined forces with Ragnall, or alternatively, he might have led a separate expedition. So there's lots, basically, no one really has a clue.
Yeah, you know.
That was a thing I found in my research It's just literally like, maybe this happened, but maybe this happened, but maybe it was this. So it's a little bit of a choose your own adventure.
It really
here.
Is. Choose your own history, for sure.
And in the annals of Ulster, there is a final choose your own adventure for him. And in this version, it gives quite a detailed account and describes Ragnall as, quote, king of the dark foreigners.
Ooh. Hmm.
And the two Jarls, Ottir and there's another guy here, Gragabai.
God, they just keep getting better. Oh my God.
And the two Jarls, Ottir and Gragabai, forsook Ireland and proceeded afterwards against the men of Scotland. The men of Scotland, moreover, moved against them, and they met on the bank of the Tyne in North Saxon land. Mm. Which, of course, now isn't really in Scotland, but is, you know, further south than that. And that's where, alas, poor Count Ottir fell. according to like the third version of the thing we've got.
Yeah, if it weren't, if it wasn't there, then it was at the other place.
One of the other two or something like that.
In the
could
other
still
year.
Be alive to this day.
Could still.
We just don't
know. We don't know. We don't know where he's buried.
At some point in 918, it turns out he probably died.
Okay.
And so there you have it.
Which is great because the year we're talking about today is 916.
Uh-huh. And anyway, that's Ottir, an interesting, naughty Norse way of raiding man.
That is excellent. I want to apologize for being so callous about the loss of your Ottir as a youth.
Rip. We will remember him.
We will remember Earl Ottir.
We'll get the full story. I still had Countess Ottir.
Of course you did.
This episode, I'm doing something quite tangentially related to that because I'm going to be talking about a guy called Flann Sion, who was the King of Meda and the High King of Ireland. And he died in 1916. And it's kind of a tale of two men. There's Flann the King and his buddy Neil, which we'll come into in a bit. But first of all, there's a whole lot of names, a lot of like misunderstanding back and forth and stuff. When we say king, there's loads of local tribes and areas and, you know, basically kind of two powerhouses, the O'Neills. But Flann Sion, or Flann of the Shannon, was the son of the previous High King of Ireland, and he inherited the throne, was King of Meda, which was like a very powerful place from 877 onwards. And then he was appointed High King of Ireland as well as King of Tara. So he kind of united these belts, as it were.
What's Tara? Sorry.
So Tara is a ancient hill in Ireland that was a epicenter for coronation of crowned kings of Tara. Normally it was nobles would come along there, and there's lots of historical digs and stuff there and loads of burial mounds. It was like, if you're the King of Tara, you were inevitably a very powerful person.
Oh, sidebar. Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind, her family plantation estate is called Tara.
Okay.
And if her name is Scarlett O'Hara, you imagine maybe
there could be
Irish
some connection.
Huh.
Yeah, and
flag
and
for follow-up.
Yeah, the highest ranked king was normally the King of Tara, and there was also the High King of Ireland, which was a separate title that was normally divided year after year. King after king, it was changed hands from the north and the south O'Neills, but he united those two. And the Hill of Tara is a very significant part of Irish history. You know, lots of like steeped lore, et cetera, there, and it's a seat of power.
Steeped lore, steep hill?
Steep hill. The steeper the hill, the steeper the lore,
that's
is what they say.
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say.
That's the rule.
But Flann is a very interesting character, and he was a highly successful king, not just through conquest or diplomacy, but also through propaganda. And so why he was so like known about is because he installed all these high crosses throughout Ireland that inscribed on them and proclaimed him as King of Ireland, him and his heirs and descendants and stuff. So he erected everywhere all these sort of milestones.
Saying like King was here.
Yeah.
What are the rules on that, doing that now? What do you know what company he used?
Yeah, a check of trade, probably you could do that. Fix builders, really. Any Freemasons out there? Or stonemasons, not Freemasons. Probably Freemasons
they
too.
Yeah, they're
probably
potentially
could both
could be helpful.
Yeah.
Both,
yeah. He also had a chief poet, which was very handy.
Love that
and
for him.
He would write poems and spread them about and sort of spread that propaganda of him like slaying demons and blah, blah, all the kind of good stuff. And I have an extract from one of his poems.
Yes, it's actually been so long since we've had poetry on the podcast.
Yeah, I wouldn't say this is very coherent poetry, though, because it's translated from the original Irish or Gaelic into English. And it's called Flann Over Ireland.
Right.
I am imagining a Flann over Ireland, and it's good.
Flann over Ireland in the fortunate house of Tuil Chachtmar, to whom the patrimony of a noble warrior with mighty valour is no excess. May his kingship be healthy, may it be everlasting, a course as far as the fringes. No king that will be more wonderful will seize hilltop or brega. Let us bend our knees, let us raise our hands, performance without diminution, so that the family line I vaunt may be everlasting, Flann over Ireland.
Wow.
Real catchy.
That was,
they didn't have like The Sopranos or anything to watch, so everyone was just reading this.
I can't really see that being worked into like a football chant. But,
no, definitely not. All was not rosy, though. As with all things in Irish history, things were quite complex, quite back and forth fighty. No one, you know, took anyone's claims of power at all seriously if it didn't suit them. He also liked to sort of do some raids, and his favourite thing when he came to power, first of all, was take hostages. He also liked to burn the nobles of his enemies alive in the buildings that he captured. Oops. So, you know, he was like, he wasn't all poetry and, you know, stonemasonry. Yeah. He was, you know, a bit fighty as well. He went on as well to quash and the Brefeina, and then him and his son Dunca, or Donica perhaps, ravaged the lands southern Connacht, including the pillaging and sacking of many churches were a little bit taboo. How can you erect crosses in one hand and sack churches in there? He wasn't a fortunate man, though, in some regards. Two of his sons died during his lifetime.
Flan the Sandman.
And two of the sons that did remain rebelled against him, but were forced back into obedience by his BFF, Niall. And though this is where another character comes in, Niall Blackney Glundoob.
That is, are you sure?
This, I'm absolutely sure.
Glundoob
of the clan Glundoob. Yeah. His grandfather was king of the Scots. He was a son of the former Irish king Aed, and he was just a confidant and of the king, and so he was able to sort of bring the sons back in line. He also helped secure a truce between Flann and the king of Breda, which is a very powerful faction. And he was so close, in fact, that he was actually named heir to the throne after he died. So one of the two sons he was going to get.
Another very good friend.
Say. What a globulin.
Yeah, yeah. It's not globulin, it's Glundoob.
Okay, well.
Glundoob. So Flann did die shortly afterwards in the year in question, which is
916.
Definitely 916. And when he did die, subsequently the joint title of King of Tara and the High King and King Meda split. So the King of Tara went to Niall. He became the new king of this sort of
King
like
of the Hill.
King of the Hill, sacrosanct.
Yeah.
And then his son took on the
Flann's
son. Flann's son, yeah, Dunca.
Interesting.
And that's sort of where the history books run out, you might think, except there is more in the lovely ancient okay. Irish poem called The Prophecy of Brechan, which is really long, translated very badly, and you can look at some excerpts on Google Docs if you really want to and tell me how wrong I am, but good luck, because I completely ran out of steam after trying to memorize all the names and shenanigans of this stuff.
Yeah, can we get that name one more time?
The poem?
Yeah.
The Prophecy of Brechan. B-E-R-C-H-A, father, accent, N.
Okay.
There you go.
I think there'll be people Googling that.
Furiously.
All over the world.
Yeah.
As they listen to this.
We should look Please at do. Google Trends is going to have a major spike on the prophecy of Brechan.
Brechan.
Okay, I don't speak.
You're murdering a beautiful language.
I'm so sorry.
You're cast out from the Glundoobs.
Oh my God, the greatest shame is not being welcomed by the Glundoobs. excellent. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Also, thank you.
Also, thank you.
Wow. It's just a time of Thanksgiving here. I'm thankful for harlots. Now, I want everyone to know that I mean harlots in a very positive sense. This tale that I'm about to tell is about women being in charge,
yeah,
and then the men who were pissed off about that and slandered them later in history.
Onlyharlots.com.
Well, Google at your own risk.
Actually, maybe we should cut that out. I'm going to quickly Google it in case that's a thing.
So I am in the Papal States today, which are in absolute disarray. And this, basically the 10th century, is considered by many Vatican historians to be just the absolute low point of Vatican history, which is really saying something.
That's saying a lot, considering the recent history of the Vatican City.
Yeah, that's true. I guess most of the...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
People saying that it was the low point were not alive to see later low points. but I do want to caveat up front that a lot of this history is disputed. And I'm going to get into the rationale behind that a bit. But in general, misogyny. So as usual, take everything with a grain of salt. So I'd like to start today by talking about Sergius III, who became Pope in 904, and who I saw referred to as, quote, that cursed Sergius, a man, the slave of all vices, and the most wicked of all men.
He sounds kind of fun.
Well, let me tell you, he got up to some good times.
Oh, the shenanigans.
For instance, he reportedly ordered the murder of his two predecessors in the papacy, and possibly fathered an illegitimate son who later became Pope. More on that in a bit, but all in all, I think we can all agree, one of the greats, Pope-wise. Now, you may wonder why such a bad man was made Pope, or you may have read some history before and not
corruption.
Be at all surprised. The answer is a family of corrupt aristocrats in Italy called the Theophylacti.
Aristocrats called the Theophylacti.
The Proto-Medici.
Which does sound like a dinosaur now that I say it out loud and probably mispronounce it. But this family, they were the real power behind the throne for about a century. And in that time, they essentially handpicked all of the popes. And the popes, of course, wielded immense power throughout Europe, meaning that this family was the real power in Europe. The head of the family is a man named Theophylact. Which
sounds
somehow
like a cream.
It really does.
Ask your doctor about Theophylact.
Side effects may include papacy. But I want to focus more on Theophylact's wife, Theodora, and their daughter, Marozia. Now, Theodora had the title of senatrix, as in the feminine senator.
Even though, of course,
the Roman Empire, as like Roman Senate, is long gone at this point. But she called herself senatrix. And Serenissima Serenissima Vestaratrix of Rome.
What does that mean?
I don't know. The serenest Vestator.
I mean, I will remind you that this is your segment.
I know. I probably should have looked that one up before I put it in. But regardless, I would like you to call me that here on out. There's not a lot written about Theodora, but what does exist paints her as this kind of Lady Macbeth. So she's overshadowing her husband. She's manipulating the power wielded by her family. Some people think that's cool. We love to see powerful women behind the throne. And some people did not think that.
Mm.
Specifically, the historian Liutprand called her, quote, a shameless whore who exercised power on the Roman citizenry like a man, which is, of course, the highest possible offense at this time in history or in most other times in history.
That's pretty straightforward damning.
Yeah.
There's no mincing words there.
No, he's really, we're throwing the W word around a lot.
Woman.
I'm just going to get it out of the way and say that Theodora did die in 916.
Okay,
so
good.
Tick the box.
Ticked.
I think all three of us chose a death this year, which says a lot about 916. But the story around Theodora and her family is too interesting to just be confined to that year. So some historians believe that Theodora suggested the two popes who followed Sergius, and she made her husband make it happen. And then in 914, she made her husband support her lover as pope, and he became Pope John X. John X, possibly the lover of Theodora, This is disputed. It's possible that John was not her lover, but was instead just some guy that was related to her and her husband. Basically, history agrees that there's some connection, but they can't decide how scandalous it is. But that's not as interesting. So let's assume that he was her lover. The most common allegation against Theodora is that she promoted a relationship between her daughter, Marozia, and Pope Sergius III. Yeah. Remember him of the extreme wickedness. At the time that that relationship would have started, Marozia would have been about 15 or 16, and Sergius was in his 40s.
Nice.
So we hate that.
That's a lot.
But these are also kind of the things that you would write about, you know, a woman that you were trying to disparage,
of course,
as well, right?
So no, you're
like,
definitely.
Oh, did you hear that she's sleeping with the Pope? You know, like, so how much faith can we put in this?
Yeah, well, I'll get into that, because it is actually, there is a reason why this later historian was so biased against them. But and in fact, nobody is sure exactly when Sergius was born. So the age gap may have been slightly less revolting, but it was still pretty bad. So Marozia was his concubine for years and allegedly had a child with him. And this is just a sidebar to say that there is an excellent Wikipedia page called List of Sexually Active Popes. Which I think is
this a true fact?
List of Sexually Active Popes is a Wikipedia page, and also is a great band.
We should just do a whole separate podcast on that.
I know, we really should. Spoiler alert, there are a lot of them.
Are there really?
Yeah. So Google in your own time. But continuing in the vein of her parents, Marozia was the de facto ruler of Rome. She wanted to promote her own son as Pope. Now, she definitely had a son. Whether or not he was the love child of her and Pope Sergius is up for debate. Mm-hmm. She was also married, so he could have just been her son from marriage. But let's assume that he was the love child of the Pope. So here's where it gets really scandalous. In 928, Marozia has Pope John X murdered. John X, who had allegedly been her mother's lover.
Yes.
And she installed her own son in his place. He became the very creatively named Pope John the 11th.
Yeah.
So she murdered her mother's alleged lover Pope and replaced him with her own son, who was himself the love child of a different Pope.
God, this is very, very trash TV.
I know, it's like scandal. It's so good.
I mean, I want to believe.
I want to believe, and I do believe everything that I've just said. So with all this going on, you can possibly understand why later historians called this period the Seculum Obscurum, or the Dark Century. But I would love it if you guys could guess the more creative and, let's say, salacious name that later historians gave it. The name that historians gave it was...
The Seat of the Holy Seed?
Oh, no, that's something good, like that. Though. That's really good. Yeah. They didn't go on a Holy See pun. No, they just called it the Pornocracy. They really did. They really call it the Pornocracy because the Greek word porny means prostitute. So, of course, that's where we get pornography.
Is
and that's
that really?
The, yeah, yeah, exactly. Wow. That is one I did bother to look up just to see. So they call it the Pornocracy, or the Rule of the Harlots. And in the words of a later historian, these women in their fornications and in their marriages surpassed the common wickedness of mankind. They're just
that's
ladies.
Terrible.
They're just ladies doing lady things.
Ladies doing lady things.
But as I've said, there is a big asterisk over all of this because of misogyny, but also because the chief chronicler of all of this was this guy, Liutprand, who I mentioned earlier. He was writing 50 years after it all happened. So immediately, you know, he's not super contemporary, but he was incredibly biased against the Theophylacti, this corrupt aristocratic family, and their allies, because he was a huge supporter of the Holy Roman Emperor, who was fighting the papacy at the time. So the Theophylacti are choosing all the popes. This historian supports the guy who is opposed to those popes. So of course he's going to be super biased. There are gender politics at play. Merely by alleging that Theodora was an adulteress and by calling her a harlot and saying she was using her feminine wiles to control her husband, they're all just ways to cast aspersions on the Theophylacti.
Well, it's her fault for being a woman.
In history.
In
with
history.
Any agency whatsoever.
I know. Had she just been nice and like not let her name be recorded in history.
Yeah.
She put men in a very difficult position where they then had to write her name down, which is very upsetting
which
for men.
So upsetting for men. And so upsetting. And then not only that, she had the audacity to do some things that caused more
other
historians to write about her.
Yes.
Oh, it's just awful.
I'm
how dare she?
Theodora here. I'm gonna have a scarlet tea on my
No, I'm obviously incredibly pro Theodora and Marozia, and I really do like to think that there must be some truth to it all, because there was just an incredible amount of turnover in the Vatican in the 10th century. And you know, the church has gone through periods of, let's say, less than angelic activity.
What? Name one thing. One thing.
I again refer you to lists of sexually active popes.
Your ex-husband was the pope, wasn't he? The one that Ragnall and Associates.
He was, yeah. Ragnall and Associates did handle that divorce, which was great. Yeah. Ironically, my lawyer there was named Theodora.
Well, I do miss JP. He was good crack, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a good one. He had a good smiley
JP
face.
JP the sec. Well, as your husband
JP
as well.
Too.
Yeah, he was great in the grill. Remember every time we used to come around your place, you'd have a...
He loved a barbecue.
He loved a barbecue.
He loved a barbecue. Really was. Get the slip and slide out.
You know, no matter the weather.
No matter the weather. He was outside. He was grilling.
He was...
He had a kiss the cook.
Yeah.
And a kiss the Pope. Because
he could swap
he
aprons.
Him, depending on how feisty he was feeling.
His ability to keep his hat on when he went down the slip and slide was phenomenal, wasn't
it's
it?
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Well, let's just say he had a head like nobody else's that was made for a mitre. Wait, that's what a bishop wears. That's what a pope wears.
Yeah.
Hats. What's... Okay. Anyway, let's go ahead and cut this train of thought off. That is just a little story about the family Theophylacti and the powerful women who were actively involved with the papacy through some way or another.
Well, I found that genuinely really, really interesting.
It's cool, right? And there are so many famous Theodoras in history, including, in fact, the one that was married to Justinian, who we've talked about.
Yeah.
And
incorrectly talked about.
Incorrectly. Yes, talked about in the wrong century, millennium. Not all of them are as scandalous as this one, but I really enjoyed the idea of this mother-daughter pair just kind of...
That no pope could resist.
Yeah, running the show.
That's so cool.
in 916 and thereabouts.
Yeah, well, there you have it. That's the second half of the decade 910s.
Thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 916. And also, this is a new year. New Year's resolutions are a thing. If you're feeling guilty for not sending us a Christmas present...
Which you should.
You really should.
You should have.
It was a.
You should feel guilty. You should have sent us a present.
My tree was barren. But a great gift would be
to... check on, sorry, just a barren tree.
Yeah, well, I was expecting...
Other people won't decorate your tree for you.
I was hoping for Christmas decorations for my...
You're just waiting there staring at this barren tree.
Yeah, willing it into action.
A great gift would be to leave us a 5-star rating, if you could, that'd be great, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever. And also write a little review, because that really, really helps other people to find... the podcast, and so they can listen and have fun and shenanigans. And who knows, maybe, you know, you'll find the person of your dreams. I don't think
that the podcast review scene is much of a single
no,
sponsor.
But to be clear, if people were to join our Patreon, patreon.com/randomlyhistory, they could come to one of our quizzes.
They could.
And that is, they have proven very sociable in the past.
Well, as we've talked about several times in this episode, I am divorced thanks to the efforts of Ragnall and Associates.
Is famously divorced. So if, especially if, I don't know, maybe if you're a pope and listening. Yeah. we do actually have one listener in Vatican City. Fact.
Oh, that's very cool.
That is cool.
I think we can just assume that
must
it is the pope. That's excellent. So Pope Francis, if you haven't given us a rating, just give us 5 stars. Come on.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, we will uphold our end of the bargain, by which I mean choose another year. So Will, can you please boot it up?
Absolutely. And as a reminder, we've chosen to select. Well, I say we've chosen.
No, there's no choice. Yeah. We have inherited the parameters.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. In accordance with the customs of the club.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Using the latest technology available.
Mm-hmm.
We are confined to the years of 1000 BCE to 2000 CE. Mm-hmm. And the next year is 1347.
1347.
Yeah, it's a bit plaguey, isn't it?
Quite plaguey.
It's a bit plaguey. That's solidly in my wheelhouse in terms of what was going on in North Africa.
Well, we all know the Black Plague was manufactured to sell more vaccine.
I've read that, yes. Yeah, in some of the darker corners Brilliant. Of the internet.
Well, look forward to next week when you'll hear about some probably fairly high quality history about North Africa and Ant's thoughts on conspiracies about the plague.
'Twas ever thus.
Right, see you next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.